everybody knows, the unofficial start of fall, the end of summer, is the exhibition starts. For me, I suppose it's looking into my computer screen, onto my little Skype box where I see J.D. Bunkus not only wearing a shirt, which is very rare, and I think hasn't happened in months, but wearing like a sweater. I guess that is the end of summer. Hope you guys
summer's over,
had
buds.
A great summer.
This Hope everybody
nice
had
sweater.
A good time.
I've never seen that sweater, actually. Is that a new one?
It's fairly new. And by that, I mean, yes, it's absolutely new.
Yeah.
Daddy did some shopping while he was locked in his apartment for 2 months. And
that's at least a C note, right?
No. This is.
Oh. Okay.
What's a C note? $100?
$100.
Oh, yeah. Definitely that.
Never
obviously,
mind.
You can't
Never
get a,
mind.
You can't get a sweater for less than $100. Like that's
I don't own an article of clothing that's more than $100. I do
yeah,
not.
We're pretty well aware of that. As the people who know you, no one's like, what?
Yeah.
So, what did he just say? Oh, we never knew. This isn't Let's one go. Of those commercials where people are like, oh, we don't know. Ben's got a secret. He paid $99 for these trucks. Like, no, it's not that. Everybody knows. All your
Let's go
cheap.
Back to you saying, no, it wasn't a C note, and then asking, what's a C note?
Yeah.
Because I
forgot. And here's the thing. I just assumed, like, my brain did a thing where you're like, that was at least a C note, and it's a hoodie, so obviously it's more than $100. So my brain wasn't even able to just calibrate that you were that you would even ask the question like that. Like, that's a stunt? That's a brag? $100? A C note? In this economy? No. Of course, yeah, I know. To you it is. I'm trying to think of, what do you think your nicest piece of clothing is like it's not a suit that Sportsnet paid for.
Yeah,
like,
that was
what's the last thing you bought for yourself that you said?
I don't buy things for myself.
Hey, Ben Ennis, I'm buying myself this. You.
So
when did
I'll.
That?
So
I
like
have to be close. When's the last time you just bought something for yourself?
Dude, straight up, I'm thinking it's not even the computer. Maybe it's this computer, but this was more for work. I didn't buy myself my Nintendo Switch. I like to say that I don't buy things for myself because I'm selfless, and maybe that's part of it, but it's mostly it's that and I'm lazy. It's just like I have everything I could ever need. I honestly couldn't tell you booze. Like I buy the nice beer.
Yeah.
Like I'm not like a college kid and buying the $1 a bottle beer. That's
I mean,
it.
You
that's
buy
the only thing Coors I spend
Banquet.
On.
I wouldn't say that it's
yeah,
exactly
I know.
As though you're
no.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not Stella.
You're not walking in there asking them, well, what's your finest lager?
Like, no.
Of course.
Yeah, but it's not Pabst Blue Ribbon, though, either.
Sure. It's like the 30 cent up from that. Ooh la la. That's quite a thing that you
That's
do.
That's it. That's what I do.
Yeah. I can't believe you got snapped up at such a young age. Hey, it's not that I don't wear nice things because I don't want to look nice. It's just that I'm lazy and cheap. That's all. That's all, ladies. You could have had an amazing Tinder profile. You could have just popped on Hinge.
I don't think that's number one on my physical attributes that I would put on my Tinder page. And plus,
you think so?
Guess what?
What would
guess
you lead
what?
With?
Guess what? Also,
Monster
there's things that are
sized head.
Also,
full
there's
of
things,
useless facts.
Also, there's things that are correlated. I'm not single.
Yeah.
I am married.
You better hope
I have
it stays that way, buddy.
Multiple
boy, oh boy.
Children. Yeah. That's I don't know if I
you have two.
Yeah, that's multiple.
Yeah.
I don't think I would live this way if I were perhaps out in the world looking for a partner. I found my life
partner. Disrespectful. That's disrespectful to your wife, you know?
I mean, she does some of the similar things, you know?
Yeah. You guys are in a pact. It's cool. I get it. You guys are in a pact. Hey. Again, your gifts to each other.
Don't lash out because you're jealous.
I'm not jealous at all. Your gifts to each other are one of you gets to sleep in while the other one does work. My gift to me every day that I can sleep in my entire life is sleep in. That's what I do. I love it. It's just so – that's basically the trade-off that we've made in life is that I love sleep more than you. I'm just more invested in getting good sleep in the mornings when I can. You decided to have love down the line, people who will, make sure that you don't go to a home when you're 68.
Yeah,
that's the trade-off.
68, that's pretty early for the home.
Yeah, but you're going to age pretty hard, I figure.
You think?
Yeah, I figure, like, it's all going to go downhill pretty fast for you.
Well, I don't rule that out. I just I would have wagered on the other side of things. All right. Well, that's interesting to know. It's a fun way to start the show today. the Leafs did the thing that they've done basically all season long. Every time you count them out, they're down and out. They're at the lowest point of the season. Everybody's lobbing grenades their way, talking about how heartless they are, how bad they are. And they come up with their best performances of the season. We saw that, like, twice by the end of the year. They lose to David Ayers and come back and rattle off three wins in a row and beat the Tampa Bay Lightning. Then they go to California, lose all three games, come back. And again, the last game before the shutdown, beat the Tampa Bay Lightning. They lose game one to the Columbus Blue Jackets and basically muster no offense. They come up with what is, this is not hyperbole, maybe their best effort of the season.
No, not maybe, game. Definitely.
In a Game 2 victory over the Columbus Blue Jackets. Yeah, they didn't win 10-0, but they easily could have, and the best players were the best players in that game.
Yeah, that was their best game of the season, and there's no doubt about it. You can show me on a chart or something, or you can bring up some game that they thumped a lesser team in a more dominant fashion. That's the best Leafs win of the season. We've said it all along that they've never put together a complete game. That was the thing about them all year. Are the Leafs ever going to play 60 minutes of good hockey? 60 minutes where you actually feel like they're the better team. 60 minutes where they don't have a chunk in there where the other team is just caving them in. This was it. And it was against a quality opponent, an incredibly well-coached team, a team that plays with a ton of discipline, a team that plays with a ton of guts. And to me, that hockey game reminded me of when Canada played Latvia at the Sochi Olympics. Because it was, hey, one of these teams is way better. One of these teams is way more talented. The only reason that it's zeros is because the other team is getting incredible goaltending. The possession was like in a whenever one of those Champions League teams comes over and plays MLS, where it's just, hey, we have the ball the entire time. Hopefully you get it. It's 70-30. And you started to get those feelings like, hey, are these guys going to blow this? Are they going to lose this game because Korpisalo is going to stand on his head and then they're going to get another squeaker get by them, or Columbus is going to get a grade A chance finally in a counter strike and score, and the Leafs are going to fall apart. And I think that is the one thing about this team that still remains unanswered when it comes to their character, is can you fall down in a game, chase the game, and be that dominant and still come back and fight your way into it? But as of right now, I thought that it was their most complete game of the season, that I have basically no nits to pick about anything about the team in the terms of anyone's performance.
No.
The only thing that sucks is obvious, which is that they, in classic Toronto Maple Leafian fashion, that finally they play this game where they're just completely dominant. They live up to every single expectation that the world has on of them. They live up to it, and they actually put, I think, the hockey world on notice a little, which is, hey, we can do this. We can go into this mode. And then they lose their most reliable defenseman to what was a really, really scary injury that kind of looked innocuous for a second and then ends up being a – what was that, 20 minutes? It felt like forever as they were trying to get Jake Muzzin on that stretcher. And it just kind of put a damper on everything that happened, not only because obviously – it hurts the Maple Leafs' chances of winning, but secondarily, but also just because, yeah, when a guy is trying to move his hands to figure out whether he has feeling in his extremities, that's when you feel the most sick as a sports fan, I think, when you're watching it. There's nothing worse than watching someone lay on the ice for that amount of time and wondering if they're ever going to be the same person again.
Right, and Jake Muzzin has a history of back injuries, which is probably what added to his concern in the moment. I'm very hopeful that it's not going to be nearly as serious as it really seemed in the moment. You talked, or you hear from some of the players that were in and around him, Mitch Marner, John Tavares, they said he was moving and said he was talking, and yeah. The indications are, hopefully, it was just a scary moment, maybe one of those situations where you get a stinger or something and you feel some numbness maybe ever so briefly. And yes, it's hard to celebrate fully just a complete wire-to-wire impressive performance from the Toronto Maple Leafs when you're left with that sour taste in your mouth. But It was such a strange, strange play as he gets cross-checked in the back, but then doesn't go down right away. Like, he, like, stumbled a couple of steps mm-hmm. before eventually wrenching his head into the opposition's leg. Yeah, into a knee, and it was, and it didn't look like, I thought maybe it was a concussion at first. He looked dazed, just super, super strange. And obviously, there's actual hockey fallout beyond that, but we'll just say the thing that's obvious that doesn't really need saying, but we'll say it, is like, that's first and foremost, it's paramount. It nothing else matters other than Jake Muzzin's long-term health, clearly. But yeah, all indications are nothing serious has happened here. He went to a hospital, which was outside the bubble. But apparently, and there's differing reports on this, he may have to quarantine, he may not. It's hard to imagine him playing in a very critical Game 3 tomorrow, mm-hmm. which means Martin Marincin draws in. Like, the Maple Leafs have given us every indication that he's the next guy up.
So, one, I would really actually like more clarity on what exactly is happening with the whole, what if an NHL player goes to a hospital thing? Because if he doesn't have to quarantine, is that telling us that hockey players have dedicated doctors or areas of hospitals, or there's a hospital with an area dedicated to the NHL? How else would that operate? How else would that work? Like, a doctor is obviously going to be in close proximity to people who are potentially going to have COVID. Like, they're going to be working in a hospital. And so that part I think needs a little bit further explanation from me. I actually would like to know what the protocols are. They seem pretty vague. And I know CJ was on top of it, and he reported immediately kind of what exactly was happening, and it depended on the extent of the injury. He said that the amount of risk that was incurred for the player, yeah. the exposure. And I just think that that's still very vague. I'd like to know exactly what that means. I think we all would like to know what that means. There's a few things that I want to talk about in further depth about this game. But yeah, let's start with Jake Muzzin, because yeah, as big as that win was, that's the biggest thing moving forward, is that they've just lost their most reliable defensive defenseman, a guy who kills penalties for them, a guy who is basically your matchup defenseman, and someone who I think... There's only a couple of guys that bring the Leafs confidence. We both had the same thought about Kyle Clifford in that game, just how he yeah. completely set the tone. And I do not believe that those two things are not related, that Clifford's hit and the way that he played to start that game did not impact the Toronto Maple Leafs game as a whole. And I think that Jake Muzzin is very similar with the way that he plays on the back end, that they don't have another guy like that. He's the only one on that blue line that has a Stanley Cup. And yes, Kyle Clifford's on the roster with a cup, but there's only one guy who plays regularly and who they lean on who is a Stanley Cup champion, is Jake Muzzin. And having him back there, he's one of the most important guys on the entire team. So they have done an adequate job without him in the lineup this season. They're 4-3-3. I don't know how you handle a team like the Columbus Blue Jackets, who, when they're going at their very best, like to get the puck below the net and cycle it around and create opportunities and try to beat you with their size, losing a guy with a ton of it. My initial thought is, going back to preseason when Martin Marincin drew in as the seventh defenseman, and remembering what I said, which is, it depends on who gets hurt for who would be the seventh defenseman. If it's Tyson Barry or if it's Morgan Rielly, I think it's going to be Rasmus Sandin. If it's anybody else, I have a hard time believing that it's not going to be Martin Marincin. And that's where I'm at today. So maybe I'm wrong, but I think that Leafs Twitter is going to have an aneurysm, because Martin Marincin is actually the guy, to me anyways, that still makes the most sense and is where the coaching staff is going to go. I'm not a huge Martin Marincin guy. I don't think that's a... I don't think anybody is, so I don't want to make a straw man here. I do think that he has been a whipping boy for Leafs Twitter and Leafs fans alike for a very long time, because the way that he entered into this team was as a analytics darling. That's someone that people could not quantify properly. And so whenever you're that and you don't have anything that makes you special as a hockey player outside of, again, the length of your stick and your height, that you become a pretty quick target for fans. Martin Marincin is fine, and you're going to need someone who can kill penalties, and you're going to need someone who can play with Tyson Barry, and I just don't... I don't see how Sheldon Keefe and Kyle Dubas are going to come to the conclusion that they want to put Rasmus Sandin with Tyson Berry. And that's going to be a pairing, exactly. That's going to be a pairing that they rely on in a playoff game against the Columbus Blue Jackets. I think that they go to Marincin. I think that they play him in very sheltered minutes. I think that they end up using Dermott and Hall as the matchup pairing. And we've actually seen those guys be pretty effective together. They played together at the AHL level, and they played together this season, and it's the best Dermott looked. So I'm not really panicking about it. I think that the Leafs can still win this series. But if Muzzin's out for the long term, I don't know if they have a blue line that can win a Stanley Cup.
No, they don't. I will say it explicitly that they don't. I mean, anything can happen, and Freddie Anderson can get super hot. But yeah, it's going to be way more relying on your goaltender if they have to go beyond this series. But this series in particular, the area that you mentioned, special teams and killing penalties, and they killed off all four that the Blue Jackets had yesterday, and the Jackets have like two shots and the four power play opportunities. But that's also one of the worst power play teams in the National Hockey League. But you got to give credit where credit's due. That's the area that the Maple Leafs have seen some success in on special teams. It certainly hasn't been on the power play. What's the one thing? Because whoever draws in for Muzzin, whether it's Marincin or Sandin, and I'm of the thought that I'd be shocked if it's Sandin, given the indications we've gotten from this team, they're going to be sheltered either way. Like Rasmus Sandin draws in, like Rasmus Sandin's maybe playing 10 minutes. Same with Martin Marincin. Martin Marincin's not coming in there to play 20 minutes a game. He's not taking Jake Muzzin's minutes. Travis Dermott is going to be the guy moved up the lineup, taking the lion's share of those missing minutes. What is an area that the player entering the lineup can affect? It's that. You say whatever you want about Martin Marincin, and again, you're right. Everybody has the same opinion of Martin Marincin. There's no need to yell about Martin Marincin because there's nobody on the other side of the fence that's like, Martin Marincin is the missing ingredient to this blue line. Nobody's saying that. But can we all at least come to the agreement that Martin Marincin can effectively kill penalties? And you can pretty well count on that aspect of his game when you throw him into the lineup. If that's all he does for you and he plays 10 minutes a game and you shelter him and he kills penalties, because apparently now they're calling penalties in this series, I'm fine with Martin Marincin being the guy that's the sixth defenseman on this team.
I'm not only fine with it, I actually think that it is the right decision. Listen, I've seen Martin Marincin, and it's the Calder Cup, fine. It's the AHL Finals. But Martin Marincin is the guy that they leaned on at that level, that Sheldon Keefe leaned on to win a Calder Cup. Every time that there was a penalty, that guy would basically play the full 2 minutes. I have a hard time believing that Sheldon Keefe isn't going to be thinking about that, making his lines for the following game. I believe that's going to be the case, and I don't think it's an incorrect one. Because, again, based on what your need is in this series, Rasmus Sandin is obviously a more talented player. And you know, I almost sound like I'm arguing against myself at times, because I made the case for Nick Robertson being in the lineup, saying that what you got to do is you need to rely on what you do best, which is score, which is speed, which is skill. So go with Nick Robertson, make sure he's in there over Freddie Gauthier, who does a lot of those other things that I mentioned, where he's the guy who can kill penalties for you. He can be more reliable defensively. He's a bigger body. He's more physically mature for this series. I don't view this as the same thing. I think Nick Robertson is still in an area where they do not have a surplus. I actually think that on their blue line, when you've got who you have in Tyson Berry and Morgan Rielly playing the power play for you, and when you have Tyson Berry as the guy that you need to pair this defenseman with, the choice is pretty clear. It's kind of got to be Martin Marincin. I would be surprised if it wasn't Martin Marincin.
Let's talk about the good players.
Yeah, let's. I was going to say, there's a couple things about this game. I said I don't have any nits to pick. I actually have one. It's the power play yet again. They had five opportunities, and they only get 11 shots, and it still looks anemic, and it still looks like, hey, if you can take away Austin Matthews, that everybody else kind of just doesn't really know what to do. They were overpassing again, which results in my least favorite thing about the Toronto Maple Leafs, which is Tyson Berry on power play one, just absolutely wiring bad shots from the point with no regard for humanity. But that's the one area where it's weird. They looked almost more dominant 5-on-5 than they do on the power play at times. Like, you feel more confident.
They had a couple of moments in the early power plays, definitely like the last power play, that nothing was going. I wouldn't say they looked anemic. Like, on the early ones, they were generating a couple of opportunities, and they tried to funnel it to the front of the net, and John Tavares was whacking away a couple of times. But yeah, this is a top five power play in the National Hockey League. They should. You get 10 minutes of power play time, you got to score. Like, I don't care who you're facing and who the opposition is and who the goalie is. Like, you got to score.
Well, I just look at Calgary yesterday. Calgary bangs home 3 power play goals. Vancouver's banging home power play goals. And do those teams have appreciably more talent than the Toronto Maple Leafs? Are they playing a far more difficult opponent defensively than those teams are? I would say no. So, yeah, figure it out. That power play is just still the one thing that remains to be what stopped you from essentially having a perfect game. But two things. The first one is, I actually got to give some credit to Freddie Anderson here, and I know that I get criticized sometimes as being like a Freddie Anderson stan, but it's very real that I thought about this when the Leafs were absolutely shelling. I'm going to look at what I have in my notes in terms of what the shots were. Shots are 23-7. And the Leafs still can't buy a goal. And Korpisalo looks almost like he's playing carefree. There's actually a break where Korpisalo skates back to his bench. And he flips his helmet up and he's looking real sweaty. But he also looks like he is just in the zone. He is seeing the puck. Freddie Anderson has only faced 7 shots at that point. And all I'm thinking is the pressure on Anderson has got to be immense right now, knowing that they're going to get their opportunities. They're not going to finish this game with 7 shots, but you're back there watching this dominance and nothing's going in the net and your counterpart is dominating. If you let one in, if you let in a bad one, you are going to be the story of the postseason now. And I don't think that any goalie locks that out completely. I just don't. I don't think that when you're down there and you're not facing any action for as long as you do, that your mind does not start to wander. And the Leafs get the first goal, which, thank God, because again, I think that if they get scored on first, I shouldn't say I think, but what we have seen in the past is that when the Leafs put together dominant performances like that, when they really, really do control the play and they get snake bit by a goaltender and they give up the first goal, they've had a tendency in years past to collapse, that they've had a tendency to lose that pushback in the moment where they say, oh, okay, it's fine, we're going to ride this thing out, eventually we're going to get ours. They slow down a little bit. And they get the first one, so that's of critical importance here when I'm bringing this up. But right after that first goal, Freddie Anderson probably made his save of the game. Mm-hmm. Almost immediately after, he comes up massive with a couple of big saves. And listen, he only finishes with, I think, 20, but he's let in 1 goal over 2 games, okay? He's let in 1 goal over 2 games. Freddie Anderson has been exactly what this team has needed him to be. And in that game, where again, he's not facing a lot of high volume, but he does face some tricky shots, I was pretty pleased that he finished it the way that he did. And that there was no heartbeat moment where you said, wow, Freddie Anderson, you screwed this team over.
Yeah, he's now become the goaltending story of this series in a positive sense. He's been the better goaltender over now 120 minutes. He's been out freaking standing. Yes, he allowed a soft goal in game one, but he made some great saves in game one. And you're right. Like, the pressure must have been insane, because I know as a viewer, and Leaf fans felt the same way, watching this thing, watching the domination, watching the urgency the Maple Leafs put forward and not being rewarded for it.
Yeah.
You've seen how many hockey games you've seen like that, where it's like you're running circles around a team and you run into a hot goal and you can't pot one, and then it's one chance the other way and you're down 1-0.
Yeah.
And against this team in this series, that's like the death knell, because then the Blue Jackets just basically throw 5 guys in front of the net and never go into the opposition zone.
It's literally what happened in game one between the Canadians and the Penguins.
Right. That's
the Penguins
exactly
came
right.
out and had a billion shots on Carey Price. He shut them all down. Habs strike, and the rest is history.
But yes, to your point about, hey, you go down and that happens to you and maybe you crumble mentally, I would take it even a step further, that even in a scoreless hockey game, considering the way Korpisalo played, considering the style of hockey that the Blue Jackets play, that we've seen even this season where they're playing a good defensive team and they go into it with an idea of, hey, we're going to match their defensive effort and we're not going to be impatient. We're going to wait for our opportunities and not blow our coverage and make risky plays. They've done that. They've gotten impatient. They get, you know, almost through two periods and it's scoreless and they can't break through, and maybe somebody's jumping into the rush when they shouldn't have and it's a two-on-one the other way. I got to give them immense credit for sticking with the game plan, because we didn't see that. We didn't see four breakaways in a row going the other way because the Leafs are like, well, we got to do something here. We got to score because what we're doing isn't working and this guy is basically unbeatable, so we need to focus way more on offense than defense. They never did that. They stuck with the game plan. They stuck with what worked. They didn't get flustered, because fans were definitely getting flustered. They stuck with it. I thought it was a real incredible character win for this Leafs team.
You know, speaking of fans, this is just a quick aside. I did wonder how no fans affected that game, because you saw a lot of moments where John Tavares was looking skyward, because the dude played a brilliant hockey game, and that's what we'll talk about next. Is just, you know, the best teams follow the identity of their best players. And the Leafs' best two players are Austin Matthews and John Tavares, and they were their best two players in that game. They were dominant. 5-on-5, Tavares was an absolute beast. Matthews, it was just a matter of time before he was going to break through. The tip is gorgeous, and yeah, he was dominant yet again. And he's going up against a team that is really, really keying on him. But when Tavares was looking up at the sky, and the Leafs are, again, up 23-7 in the shots, I did wonder if this is in Toronto and there is a packed house, if that nervous energy permeates onto the ice. I'm a believer in those things. And so,
even if it's not audio, like you can't hear it, you can feel it. You can feel everybody feeling, even if it's just like affirming the feeling that you have inside of you, that I'm sure these Leafs, they felt it. They had to. They've been playing the games. They know the storylines. They remember game one. But if you have, it's one thing to have, you know, you professional athlete feel it, but understand that, hey, we can get past this. This isn't really, I mean, that's kind of a false feeling. It's all right. We're better than this team. We just waited out. We're going to score. Yeah. It's quite another to have 20,000 people not thinking the second part of that, only the first part. You definitely feel that on the ice. Yeah, I'm convinced of that.
Yes. I totally agree. I couldn't have said it better myself. So, yeah, I thought that everybody played well, that it was a really good team win, that I wasn't mad about anybody's play. I didn't think, oh man, that guy had a crappy game, or the Leafs covered for this person. I thought some players were not as noticeable as some others, but ultimately, everyone was good, but Matthews and Tavares were amazing. Yep. And that's what happened in that hockey game, that those two guys dominated essentially every single one of their shifts. They were buzzing all night long. They never really took some time off. And both guys, despite Korpisalo and the way that he played early in that hockey game, I know Tavares scores on a breakaway, but really both guys being on the score sheet was of no surprise to anyone if you watched that game. They were awesome. And they set the pace. They set the tone. And this was the formula, right? This is what everyone looked at when we imagined what the Leafs could be. And it's being strong down the middle. And I think that you got a pretty good look at what being strong down the middle with two of the best centers in the entire NHL can look for you when they play like that through 60 minutes, when they're engaged like that through 60 minutes. It was an ass-kicking.
Yeah, you can talk all you want about the third line being important for this team because they're going to get the favorable matchups and the opposition's going to key on the top two lines. That's a bonus, really.
Yeah.
You need your top four forwards to impact the score sheet. And especially in the playoffs, where third line minutes are going down and basically fourth line minutes don't exist, where you can have an Austin Matthews play 25 minutes, you can have a John Tavares play near that as well. Like those, you have to have those guys impacting the game and not just looking good like Matthews did in game one, actually scoring. So yeah, that's the only way to win, is to have Austin Matthews, John Tavares look like that offensively.
Yeah, and again, I think it's really, really been a little understated how good Matthews' conditioning has been through these two games, because it really has been a question mark that, okay, the only defense of Mike Babcock in the past of the way that he played Austin Matthews was, well, maybe we don't know his conditioning the way that the sports science department does. Maybe we don't know what kind of shape he's in. And then the guy gets a disease that affects your lungs.
Right.
And comes back and is playing 24 minutes and not slowing down throughout the course of a hockey game with added ice time. Like, he's got 9 shots on goal in this series so far. God knows how many attempts he has. It's got to be a billion. And at this point, honestly, this is actually the... If we're talking about things that actually... I don't like doing this. I don't like kicking Mike Babcock when he's down. I think we do too much of it as I don't know, people who cover this team. But yeah, if there's one thing that is really looking bad for Mike Babcock in hindsight, it's not playing Austin Matthews more. Like, that seems to be working. And if there's one thing that in hindsight looks bad for Sheldon Keefe, it's not playing Kyle Clifford more.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to get to next, because that's the thing we just kind of scratched the surface of, and I don't know how... It doesn't deserve a long conversation, because he did only play 736. But, man, I've been watching these games, these other playoff games in the bubble with no fans. Just about every team is like, well, we got to find a spark somewhere, and you, Twitter Brigade, can push back against the value of physicality or fighting, and it wasn't a fight yesterday, but in many of these games it has been. Hey, how do we get into this thing? How do we feel like this is something more than just a scrimmage? And it's been throwing a physical element into the early portions of this game. Like, in a noon game, the first game of the bubble, Carolina, the Rangers, is a scrap, and Justin Williams is getting into it, so, like, not exactly drawn up that way, not exactly the Kyle Clifford type, but everybody else understands it. I thought the Maple Leafs might go that route in Game 1. They didn't, and it was a very 50-50 game. But, man, I know they have more skill. The Toronto Maple Leafs are the better team than the Columbus Blue Jackets, so on balance, they should look better than them for 60 minutes. You can't tell me that what Kyle Clifford did in throwing the body early, getting physically involved, didn't aid this team in being more engaged in upping the compete level.
I totally agree. And again, this is not a situation where the guy is Jay Rosehill, you know? That it's not that he can just...
No, he can play.
He can play. He made 2 beautiful passes to start that game that created offense for the Leafs. And, you know, our buddy Dave Bedini tweeted me, hey, do you think that you'd move him up the lineup? And I said, no, because you're playing amazing right now. But, yeah, play him the appropriate amount and play him early. Like, when the game is not hanging in the balance and you're not trying to play the defensive hockey to save your life, or you're chasing the game or whatever you're doing... Yeah, play Kyle Clifford. He's obviously an effective player, and he does something for you that, frankly, not a single other Toronto Maple Leaf does. Okay, Kasperi Kapanen sometimes goes in hard on the forecheck. Doesn't obliterate people the way that Kyle Clifford obliterated, what is it, Kukak? I think it's,
yeah,
or Kukan? I don't remember. Either way, that guy was seeing...
It's Kukan.
Yeah, Kukan. That guy was seeing Kukans after he got absolutely lifted. But, man... I know that Leaf fans get really invested in what the tough guy does, what the guy down the lineup does, and that it becomes way too big a focus sometimes in this market. But this is actually one of those times where I feel as though it is appropriate. And yeah, we have Ryan Reeves today. And yeah, I'm sorry, but if you think back to Vegas' Cup run, what made them special? It was having that fourth line where Ryan Reeves was there, and they would come out and they would kick somebody's teeth in for their shift and then get off, and that team went to a Stanley Cup final. And I don't think that the Leafs would be... I don't think that they would all of a sudden be betraying their identity if they play Kyle Clifford 8 to 10 minutes a game. Let's just put it that way. I think that they'll be okay.
Yeah, they'll be fine. All right. That was a lot on the Leafs, but they deserve it, naturally,
yeah.
And we're going to do more on the Leafs.
Again, that was satisfying, right? Did you not? I think that if you are a Toronto Maple Leafs fan... And no matter what side of the aisle you're on of blah, 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 that was it. That was them unlocking who they're supposed to be. Do I expect them to play that way every single game? No. But
because that's also the thing.
But at least we all don't feel like everybody's taking crazy pills about what this team can be. That we actually got to see it once, and now everyone can point to this and say, see, this is the bar. This is the standard. That this is the way that you can play. We were all curious to see if it could happen. We were all dubious at times as to whether or not you were ever going to reach this potential. But there it was. There was your best win as a hockey team. There's, unless we're going to go all the way back to the Bruins. But no, this calendar year, this season, this is the best that they've ever looked. Wire to wire, answered a ton of questions, got the best out of their players, got their goaltending going. Their blue line was good. Man, even Tyson Barrie, I crap on Tyson Barrie a lot. The guy came up with multiple takeaways against the Columbus Blue Jackets forward and then made the smart play to get it out. It was a very good game, man. It was a very, very good game. It was a complete game. And yes, that's something you dream on as a fan. That's what you dream on in terms of this team going on a deep run and shocking a lot of people and, frankly, pissing off the hockey world.
Yeah, but yeah, can they string two of those together? That's always been the question. There's a few things I've done and experienced in my life that maybe I'll have to do again, but I'd be fine just never doing them again. I'm going to do everything in my power to avoid doing them again. Colby Armstrong on the line right now. One of those things is moving, Colby. I never want to move again. Oh. And it was so scarring for me to, first of all, pack everything up and clean out the old place and blah, blah, blah. Like, it's just never ending. We're still unpacking. It was like almost a decade ago. You're in the middle of a move. I know you agree with me. It's the worst.
Oh, so like, just a little background on my life. Every house that I've bought, you know, I bought in Toronto, we sold it, you know, we have the house here in Pittsburgh that we had, but like everywhere else that I've gone, Saskatoon, when I sold my house back home in Saskatchewan, every other place, so I just, like, left, and then I never, like, dealt with selling it or getting it prepared to move or to sell. Like, you know, it's just kind of like a thing. So this is, like, a first time, and it is an absolute nightmare. It is an absolute nightmare. The people, the families that do, you hear of these families, guys, that do, like, they buy a house, they build a house, they sell it, like, a year later, and then they move again. Those people are complete psychos.
Yes.
Yeah.
Aren't they?
Yes. Well, they're making huge money, obviously. They're making massive profits.
But you gotta be, like, to go through that, though. No, oh, my goodness. But we should have planned ahead, right? Like not the smartest thing. All that downtime and quarantine, I could have decluttered because we moved all of our stuff here to our house, right? So we had our houses where we were playing, you know, city to city to city, get rid of it, move our stuff around. And then I had my house in Saskatoon of all that stuff that we jammed into one house now. And we didn't go through it. We just left it. Oh, out of sight, out of mind. Until now, we're going through it. And it's funny. Yeah, it's nice of you guys to bring that up. It's been an absolute disaster of a nightmare. I thought it would take 2 weeks. It's taken well almost beyond a month. It is a joke.
Yeah.
A joke.
I'm just trying to track a few things here. One is that where all your properties are. And then the beach house in Miami. You know, we got to tell Consuela, hey, don't touch our stuff. Don't touch all of Army's medals from Pyeongchang. Leave those in the cupboard. Okay, we got our house where we stuff all the stuff in Saskatoon. Yeah, okay, we got that house. Yeah, poor guy. All your millions of houses that you have, they come with problems. You're literally Puff Daddy. You're more money, more problems. It's okay, buddy. Like you're gonna be all right. You're gonna be all right.
Yeah,
I believe in you.
My house in Saskatoon that really sent you spinning, didn't it?
That's yeah, just it really
like,
did.
Whoa.
Yeah. How could anyone afford that place? How could anyone afford the luxury?
Like I never had to worry about it before because I had my people take care of it. They sold the old place. They packed everything up. I just washed my hands.
Yeah, his mom, 100%. His parents. Your parents did Hey, you know what though? Shout out to your parents who definitely took care. Yeah. Like your mom definitely took care of that place. She sold it. She did everything. She prepped it. She baked the cookies that went in the oven that made sure that it smelled all nice. You know that she did everything possible to get you top dollar.
I bought a condo when I was like 23 or something back in the day in Saskatoon. And I just showed up to it. My mom went and bought like all the furniture, everything. Yeah. I just like literally turnkey walked in. It was all set up. I got to say though, shout out to all the hockey player moms. Guys in the NHL, trust me, their moms and their dads do a ton for them. I'll guarantee you, as they trot around and get traded and need help here, have kids, they fly in, they drive up to go take care of things. It's shout out to all them. Probably right now more than ever with guys being away, getting help for their wives and their kids back home.
So obviously it's chaotic, but you can't really see the chaos in the little Zoom shot we have of you on Sportsnet calling these games.
Background. Can I say something?
Well, yeah, go ahead.
So I'm working the other night, and it's my third game, and I think we're doing like the first intermission of the 10:30 start. So it's like fairly late. My wife's a really heavy sleeper, but my youngest years old, she comes down. I hear her crying while we're live. We're live on the thing. Yeah. She's crying for mom. I don't know why she's downstairs. Mom's upstairs sleeping. She wandered down. And thank goodness I didn't make a peep. I didn't have to chime in at the time, because if she heard, that would have been electric. She would have just came right in, like live TV, right in there crying. She's just crying. So I'm so anxious that's going to happen. Yeah, I think it'd be good. I'd be freaking out personally, honestly, but I think people at home would think it's pretty funny.
100%.
Except for, here's the thing. It would have been a fine look for you, because you would have looked like super dad swooping in, taking care of your crying daughter. Hey, this dad's always
hey,
on
gotta
call.
Gotta go, gotta go.
Hey, this dad takes no shifts off. He's just here, you know, middle of the night, daughter's crying, I'll swoop in, I'll take care of you, sweetie. But yeah, for her, that lives forever, you know. It's just going to be, that's there, her crying on Twitter and on the internet. That's just there forever. Like, that's what kids, that's what sucks about being a kid today is that. And that's why I don't get these parents who do the videos where, have you ever seen them where they'll put them on camera and say, oh, your favorite player got traded. Oh, your favorite player's
so
on.
Funny.
And then the kid
I ate all your Halloween candy.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, took the thing you love the most and it's destroyed now. What do you think about that? And then they have a super emotional reaction because they're kids. And all I think is, yeah, that's going to follow your kid forever. Of course it's going to follow your kid forever. The first person that finds that clip, you know, if you had a video of your buddy that was him crying about a player getting traded, you'd play. Like, I have pictures
at
of
his
my
wedding.
Friends. One of my friends got a perm. One of my friends got a perm when he was in grade 9, and it's still the number one joke of our friend group. It's like, this picture of him with a perm. It's number one. It's the easiest way to get a pop. He can be saying anything. He could be talking about the most serious thing, and you'll just go, hey, remember when you got a perm? Boom. Laughter. Cheap pop every time. It works. It's just immediate go-to.
Well, how about that one kid that's like internet famous, the dad's doing like I don't know what he's doing, like a political news story or some kind of news story.
Korea.
And the kid just wheels in the room in his office, and then like the mom true, or like the babysitter crawls in and like reefs the kid right out of there. That's the best one.
That's the gold one. Standard. Yeah, the kid on like the wheelie thing. Yeah. It was great.
Swagger with which the kid comes into the room. Like, it's almost as though he knows he's there to mess
things up. Doing the Conor McGregor arms, too, almost.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally. Anyways, I've loved your backgrounds. I asked about
what kind of
apple it was. You didn't respond. It's fine. I had to guess. So I guessed it was Red Delicious. You changed
it up.
I don't
even know.
You ate the apple.
The apple got a lot of action, actually. I didn't know it would get that. I had books there. That's like a little kid's like art desk. Yeah. And I'm getting a lot of comments that I need a bigger desk. Like, people think it's actually like a desk. It's not. It's like a little work table.
Yeah.
And I have some
kids
stuff.
Yeah, but you can understand their confusion. Your jerseys are hanging above it. And it's like, this is where I make my kids work, underneath where daddy's sweaters go.
No, I hung those up for the TV thing. I only hung those up so it looks cool, like a hockey set kind of thing. I don't know what I'm doing. I got enough to worry about. I got to do my own makeup. I got to do my own hair. I got to figure out how to match, you know.
Buddy, you
got to
call your mom. It sounds like you got to call your mom. You got to get her on a plane immediately. Like, she'll take care of it. She'll do a set design. She'll do your makeup. She'll give you a little snack when you're getting hungry. She'll scoop the girl at midnight when she's crying. You need your mom. Exactly. Yeah. You got to send her a little note like, hey, mom, miss ya. Just wondering, you know, what if I flew you down? What if I flew you down for a couple of weeks, and then when she gets here, there it's just like a to-do list, basically, that you roll up.
Oh, yeah. Then I just yell at her the whole time, like, take the kid! Keep him quiet! Don't let him come in here!
Do my hair, please, mommy! Do my hair! No, I love it.
Man,
we were texting a little bit last night, and I think we both had a pretty similar feeling, which was Leafs absolutely needed the first goal in that game the way that they were playing.
Oh.
And they get it, so everything turns out to be okay. But do you feel like that was actually kind of a turning point moment for that team? Because, let me just ask you, have you ever seen them play a better hockey game this year, this season, this team?
Yeah, that was pretty complete, pretty solid, pretty dominant puck possession, consistent through the entire game. Like, totally JD. And the one thing that when we were texting last night, I'm like, I was kind of thinking because they couldn't get the goals. You could see some frustration building. Credit to them just sticking with it. And, I mean, that's when you're playing good like that, the key is, and guys say this in the room, like, stick with it. They'll break. We'll get one. You know, and then once you get one, you know it's done. You know, you kind of know you just buried them. And that's the thing, though, I think probably that had, you know, Leafs Nation and, you know, people that cover this team holding their breaths is the possible ability for, like, a, you know, Leafs possession, take it back, swoop around, you know, an errant pass that hits a skate. And then all of a sudden, like we saw with Atkinson last game, and it just come down, bing, quick strike, boom. It's 1-0 after you've been dominated the entire game, and what that would do to the Leafs possibly, right? Like, I was just kind of going, this is setting up perfectly for this situation to happen with the way Columbus plays. Like, just getting their butts kicked, you know, getting out skated, getting out puck possession, and then all of a sudden one quick chance the other way, and it changes the entire game. So that goal was big. That Matthews goal was big. A celebration was huge. It was a huge relief, I think, for them, and let them play a little bit more free in their minds to just, you know, that it's working and you know, get that first goal and get the lead was huge, especially when you're dominating like that. Like, that was absolute domination.
Yeah, every Leaf fan was thinking that exact same thing when it was scoreless and you're out shooting them like 22-9. Yeah, obviously that was the nightmare scenario. And we talked about this a little off the top of the show, though, Colby, about how I'm sure the players were thinking about it a little bit, but maybe the idea of not having fans in the building didn't allow that to permeate. Like, you've played in games like that. Is there anything to that? Because it really did feel like, hey man, you get 20,000 Leaf fans in that building feeling the same thing that maybe is just below the surface for those players, and maybe it does result in the thing that everybody's thinking about. Do you think it had an impact playing in that type of game with no fans?
Well, I do know. I think I know with fans, and I've been in games where, you know, your team's been, you know, chipping away, big save after big save after big moments after net mouth scramble, and you just can't find a way. And you can feel, like, you know, you can feel the fans, like the tense feeling in the building. You can feel like the oohs and the ahs and the groans of frustration or defeat in those moments in the building, and it amplifies it. I think it definitely amplifies that feeling. You know, and amplifies the feeling on the bench to, like, kind of, like, get past it and stay, you know, stick to what you're doing that's working, maybe not generating, you know, on the scoreboard, but it's working right now until you can finally break them. But I do think that's a little bit of an advantage through these games where, you know, no fans are in the building. And I've seen momentum shifts, you know, with teams and stuff without fans. So it's kind of cool to sit at home and watch all that happen. But I definitely think there's a, like, that kind of, like, murmur or emotional mumble that can be of a home ice team that can't quite get it done. I think that definitely dampens it, not obviously having the fans in there and having that kind of that feeling in the arena. But that's a cool feeling, though. It's a cool feeling when the whole, you know, collective arena, you know, has that frustration, or, you know, they throw their hands up and their head back in situations, and it happens for 20 minutes at a clip. It's quite a feeling in the arena when it's like that. I think it's kind of fun, right?
Yeah. No, I miss it. I miss it a lot.
Yeah.
I've said a few times that I'm still enjoying these games. I'm super happy that sports are back. I understand the parameters, but sports fans in the building, I think, are more meaningful than we realized watching these games. And now we're actually getting a feel for that right now. And yeah, my hope is still, and maybe this is a foolish one, but I really do hope that we get to the point when they're getting closer to the Stanley Cup playoffs that they get creative here and they figure out a way to, you know, even if it's 5% or 10% capacity, that they can put some fans in these buildings and give it a little bit of energy, because it really does change the game, man. And yeah,
you guys, did you guys watch the Rangers Carolina last night too? Like, did you see, like for example, like that Sebastian Aho goal, which was a big goal. It was unbelievable. Yeah. Like, stripped the defender of the puck, dangled, through D'Angelo and then backhand falling to a knee shelf, like key moment of the game, elimination game. And I found myself, I was like, whoa, mom, what a goal. But can you imagine if there was like fans in there? Like that just would have been amplified through the roof or on the road, just like, you know, the fans just like hands in their face, like unbelievable. So, you know, you miss those kind of like, you know, visual moments and the feeling that it gives you when there is fans there for sure.
Yeah, I still am curious about if there's no fans in the stands and one team wins the cup, do you even do a lap? Like, what's the point?
You know, yeah, and then we were, you know, there was the fist bumps last night. Like, all the talk about it being like a peewee tournament kind of, everyone's in the hotel, you know, don't go on the water slides, boys, we got a game tonight. You know? and you know, but you're in the bubble. I was wondering, like, I know the protocol and everything, but, like, no one's – they're getting tested, you know, like the handshake line, I guess it doesn't make a big deal, but it was funny to see. I was like, you know, all the comparisons to like minor hockey tournament. And then we see the little knuckles with the gloves on hand bumps down the line. I'm like, this is exactly like a little minor hockey tournament.
Yeah. There's some things that are, we've just come to accept that they're eyewash, that they're there for the public. And maybe it's good because ultimately it's just a reminder of how seriously everyone is taking this. But yeah, they're all in the bubble and there's nobody testing positive. You see this in the NBA too, right? The play-by-play teams are behind glass. They're in these like glass cases to call the game. It's like, oh boy, don't release them. They're all testing negative. Everybody in there is testing negative. You really don't need that stuff. But whatever. It's just, again, it's a reminder. So I think Austin Matthews has been the best player in both these games. You can make the case for Korpisalo. You could have made a case for Seth Jones, whatever. I think it's been him. Do you think he looks like a guy who's gone up a level?
Yeah, I do. And I, you know, for me, my only knock on his game is how actually huge he is. Like, he is a monster of a man on the ice. Like, his body and the way physically he could use his body. I'm not talking trucking a guy. I'm talking, like, barreling through opponents. Just those like physical competitive battles where he's, you know, prone and he's really good at it to just, you know, do the little pick with his stick lift pull. Like, he doesn't really impose his size on certain things where I think, you know, through the first, you know, couple games here, I've seen him, you know, physically engaged. He did get wrecked by Werenski last game, a couple games ago down into the corner, but like, you know, he's involved a little bit using his body that way where he can really change a game and impose his size, you know, especially, you know, in tight spaces. And he's really good, those good hands. So, but yeah, he's definitely elevated his game, right? Like, he's elevated and, you know, he's a guy that just won't be denied. And you know, just to see him score that goal, the celebration that we're used to seeing him, you know, celebrate and get into it. But I imagine that was, you know, something else a little bit extra special just because of the way he was playing and kind of the relief to get on the board like that in that situation, I think was, you know, something extra, you know, for, you know, elite player for them to feel that. That's like a good feeling. So I think it's good for the Leafs to have him get that feeling and playing the way he is for sure is next level.
Yeah, man. And again, noticing a couple of hits in that last game, something that, you know, a guy doesn't hit whenever he has one, people go, whoa, he hit. And that's happening every time he's doing it right now. And, okay, speaking of hits, before we let you go, do you think that play that injured Muzzin should be looked at by the league? Because Dubois, he puts the lumber in his back. He cross-checks him. It's pretty high. It's a weird play. It's an unfortunate play. But is it something that you looked at and review? And, like, sometimes we do that where we slow it down and we're looking at it not in real time. But is that something
you
think the league needs to look at?
I don't think they need to look at it. I think, I mean, at the time, if you're going to call a cross check, you call a cross check. But, I mean, he kind of goes down. He pinball pushes off the puck. I think he was still trying to go to make a play at the puck until Kerfoot kind of cut in and took it, and he kind of left it. And at that point, everyone was converging into like a hornet's nest in the corner, and he collided with Bjorkstrand's leg. So, yeah, I don't think it's a suspension. I don't think at all it's a suspension. Obviously, a terrible outcome, having him in a scary situation, seeing that happen. And I know with all the comments afterwards, everyone's worried, you know, obviously about his health being point number one. But, you know, as far as the league and looking at that, I mean, that's, you know, he did definitely give him a shot, but I don't think it's a suspension or something worthy of looking at.
Yeah, I'm with you. Hey, Colby, thanks, buddy. Good luck on the continued move, and maybe a different fruit behind you next time we see you on Sports.
Yeah, I know.
Watermelon, mango, I don't know, something.
Enjoy the visit from your mom, buddy, because I know she's flying down now. So now that we put that in your head, you're 100%, that's the next call you're going to make. Oh, nice to hear from you, son. Yo, Mom, I was just thinking about you.
Hey, what are you doing the next couple of weeks? Yeah.
Come see the new house. Yeah, that's it.
Well, now I got that. Yeah, you know what though, too, like the chalkboard and like the setup on the little kid table, like that's a whole another ball game of pressure now. I got it. Like you're calling for other fruits on there. Like I got to really step it up. So any suggestions? Just text me, boys. We'll see what I can do.
Pineapple is it's really.
Oh, that's a nice look.
That's a good one.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right, see buddy. We'll talk to you later.
All right, boys. Yep. Good talking to you.
See you, man.
There's a Colby Armstrong. Beauty. There's an update on Jake Muzzin's status. It's good and bad. Well, it's good because he's out of the hospital and he's in quarantine at the hotel, but that's it. He's in quarantine at the hotel. He's done for this series. This series, there will be no Jake Muzzin. They haven't expanded on the health aspect, but you got to figure if he's not in the hospital, it's was just a scare, and he's in the hotel, which is great news from just a personal standpoint. But I don't know what the recovery means here. It says he will remain in quarantine within the hotel and look to rejoin his teammates upon recovery. Recovery from the quarantine or from the injury? Like, is there an injury to recover from here?
Yeah, this is, again, we're all trying to deal with this stuff on the fly, but I still don't understand what's happening. Because, okay, so he's out of the hospital. That's a great sign. Does not need to be monitored. But is he out for this series because he went to a hospital or because he can't play?
Right. Here's the way I read that was that the injury is not serious and he's not really that banged up, but that he's in quarantine, and that's why the series is going to be over by the weekend, right? They play back-to-back Thursday, Friday, and then a potential game five would be on Sunday. So that's pretty quick turnaround for a guy to get out of quarantine. Mm-hmm. If he's in quarantine right now, that's the way I read that email from Toronto Maple Leafs PR, is that this is a quarantine issue now, that the health stuff is behind us because he got checked out at the hospital. That looked fine. Again, this is just me interpreting. Well, this is all we can do.
It's probably a little bit of both. I would imagine that he's not healthy enough to go play in a back-to-back, that they are going to look after him and make sure that everything is fine. But this is from our friend Dr. Brian Goldman at Night Shift MD. He's a really good follow on Twitter. He listens to the show pretty frequently, but he wrote to me earlier today. He said, the rules for the NHL, or the NHL rules for Jake Muzzin re-entering the bubble are what they are, which is that he doesn't know them. But then this is the important part. From an infection control point of view, Muzzin spending time in a Toronto hospital is not a major risk for contracting COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. So, that's the way I would have thought too, is that there's few places in the world that have COVID-19 protocols like a hospital that they would certainly be able to get you in and out. That's why it was crazy that people weren't going to the emergency room during the pandemic. It's like, no, man, get yourself checked out. Yeah, idiots.
Well,
like
I didn't go because I thought I had COVID-19. I didn't go because I sliced the middle of my hand and I still have a scar from it from that avocado injury. Good God.
But yeah.
Still waiting for a sympathy card from you. I guess it got lost in the mail, but whatever. This is devastating for the Leafs, right? Again, assuming that Jake Muzzin is doing well because of him being outside of a hospital already, going from Jake Muzzin to Martin Marincin is about as steep a drop-off as you can have in the NHL. Like, especially considering what the Leafs have a surplus of, which is they have no Jake Muzzins other than just the one Jake Muzzin. There's nobody else that even comes remotely close to providing what he provides. The only source of optimism I have, the only reason that I'm feeling okay about this from just a hockey standpoint, is Travis Dermott looked really good with Justin Hall when they played together. It was actually kind of the turning point for Travis Dermott during the regular season, was getting paired up with Justin Hall. And frankly, Dermott is a guy who is supposed to be in the top four. That is, he's a second round pick. And last season, the talk of the offseason was, what is Travis Dermott going to be like this year? Where are you going to put him? Is he going to be on the right side? What exactly is he going to do? And we've said this for a while. You, myself, and Justin Bourne have had a lot of conversations about Travis Dermott and what his ceiling is. And the one thing that we all agree upon is that it's getting to the point where Travis Dermott really has to show something and show something consistently. And if he is able to string together a couple of games here where he looks awesome and he and Justin Hall function well as a matchup role or a matchup pairing, I think that does a lot in terms of where you feel you are as a franchise, not just because of re-signing him and his money or whatever, the comfort in which you give it to him. And then secondarily, if you are looking for flexibility on this roster and you are trying to get rid of, as I said, a surplus, it's certainly left-shot defensemen. And him playing really well, not to be callous about it, but it really does open him up a little bit more as a trade piece, as someone that another team can say, well, that's maybe a top four guy that you can go out and acquire. It's just a numbers game, man. Like, we can keep saying the right shot thing, but it remains to be unproven. And I mentioned it on yesterday's show that they've got five or six guys that play the left side moving into next year, and they only have one that plays the right side. So eventually there's going to have to be some type of bubbling out process here that involves one of these dudes. And yeah, this is a showcase for him. This is a big moment in his career. This is real now. This isn't when he played the Bruins and they asked him to do too much and he was a rookie and you said, well, how much can you really expect from this guy? And when he makes a bad pinch, isn't that just what you expect with a rookie defenseman? This is now all of a sudden become, hey, Travis Dermott, you are now a focal point for this team. You have gone from a sheltered third pairing with Tyson Barry to one of the most integral roles of this team moving out of this through the rest of this round.
Yeah, you're taking the minutes of the most important defenseman in a five-game series that's tied at ones. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk to Ryan Reeves of the Vegas Golden Knights. Coming up next, it's Good Show. Ben Annis, J.D. Bunkus, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. All right, very happy to be joined by our next guest. Oh, I will be very happy to be joined by our next guest when he's on the line, because he, just like Terrence Ross, was early, or actually on time, and we're the late ones. So yeah, we're going to reconnect with Ryan Reeves.
So while we wait, let's just continue to talk about the Maple Leafs, because this is a huge Leafs day. They come off their most impressive win of the entire season, which is obvious because not only were the stakes at their very highest, even for a team that had big games, like when they played Florida and when they played Tampa Bay after that West Coast trip, they were battling for the postseason. So you mentioned it. They're not foreign to games that have meaning this year. This isn't years past where they've basically been coasting since Christmas. Mm-hmm. This has been a meaningful year. But it is going to be really interesting to see how they respond after playing their most complete game of the year, but then losing one of their most integral pieces this early in the process. It's got to be tough on everybody involved. You just hope Jake Muzzin's okay, man. Like, you just really hope that him being out of the hospital is a really big sign that things are okay.
Yeah, and hopefully there's even more of an update. But again, if you just missed it, breaking news that Jake Muzzin's out of the hospital. He's in the hotel, but he's in quarantine, which means that he will not play the rest of the Columbus series. All right, very happy to be joined now by Vegas Golden Knights forward Ryan Reeves on the line right now. Ryan, thanks so much for doing this. Appreciate it.
No problem. How you doing?
Hey, good, man. Thanks for making time for us. I know it's early where you are. We appreciate it, man. Thanks. I think we got to start with it. Like, you are one of a few NHL players to kneel during the anthem. I watched your answer during the post-game presser, you and Robin Lehner. But it's something where, man, even in a Zoom conference call, even in a reality where the media isn't there, you know, you just finished playing a hockey game. You've got a lot of adrenaline flowing, and all of a sudden people are launching in questions to you that are really important. Is there anything else that, you know, you wanted to say after reflecting and, you know, taking some time to yourself? Or are you kind of at the point where you do want to demonstrate, but you want it to be personal, and you kind of want the media to stay out of it more? Like, how do you want this handled for you personally moving forward?
Well, you know, I think, I did it because, in hockey, there's not a lot of people that are going to do that. And the conversation needs to be started in hockey. And I think, you know, the whole point of the kneeling is, you know, the kneeling isn't going to, you know, directly incite the change, but it's going to start the conversation for change. Me and Lenny had a conversation and thought that, you know, we were two good two people that could start that conversation up. So moving forward, you know, me and Lenny and other guys are going to start talking about what we can do to help out with this movement, for sure. It's going to be a little tougher when you're stuck in a bubble, but you know, you better believe that it's not just, you know, I'm going to take a knee and then I'm done with it. There's got to be some wheels that are put in motion after that.
Yeah, it was great to see Robin Lehner involved, and then the conversation with the media afterwards, and then Tyler Seguin on the other side. You guys obviously had a conversation, and you were on record before the game as having that conversation. Apparently not the case with Matt Dumba, who again raised his fist during the anthem yesterday, and the Wild have said that, yeah, no, we haven't discussed it. We've talked about eliminating racism, but there's been no discussion about anybody joining with him. Do you think communication about the protest that you're going to do on that day is important, especially with your teammates, and that you can even reach across the aisle to the opposition? And do you find that a little bizarre that the Wild have not really communicated with Dumba about what he's doing?
I mean, I was in communication with my teammates and the right people within the organization. I can't speak for what happened with Dumbs. I didn't really know that any of that was going on. I don't know what kind of communication. And, you know, hey, there could have been, and maybe you know, they're just not telling you. But I can't speak for what happened with Dumbs for sure.
So, you know, you mentioned that it's hard to incite change when you're in a bubble, but so much of this is just about talking, right? And taking people outside of their comfort zone. And I do wonder whether or not actually being in a bubble environment where guys are together constantly and you are seeing players from other teams, if it actually is more conducive to starting conversations, if it's easier for guys to be able to actually sit down, have a one-on-one and talk. You mentioned that, you know, you're talking with your teammates, that you and Lehner decided to make this decision. Have you found that other guys have been coming up to you? Again, I'm not asking you to name names, but have you found that you have been talking more with guys around the league about issues regarding race than you had before?
Yeah, I mean, and I think just overall, because the conversation's been started since, you know, the George Floyd incident. You know, I think conversation has been started, and for sure, you know, after that happened a couple of days ago, I talked to a couple of teammates, you know, guys that I've never talked to about race before. You know, we've had quick conversations. A couple of guys, you know, most guys have come up and said, you know, we support what you're doing, and we believe in what you're doing. And you know, there's definitely been some backlash too, and I knew that was going to come with the territory. You know, a lot of people obviously not happy with the military aspect of it, but you know, I think I tried to make it very clear that in no way do I disrespect the military. I have nothing but the utmost respect for all that, for all that they do for this country. But you know, this was a decision that I made for change in a different area, and I think it was just something that was necessary to start the conversation within the NHL.
Yeah, I think that we're at least getting to a point where people are not making that confusion, that they're not drawing those lines between kneeling and the military. I think that there's going to be a crowd of people that always do, but again, it's people who aren't really listening. But you know, the reason I kind of bring that up just about conversations amongst teammates and players is that I remember we talked to Devontae Smith-Pelly when he decided to skip the White House, and he didn't want to go, and he said, frankly, that a lot of his teammates didn't get it. And he didn't really elaborate on that, about kind of what that meant. I think it was only Holtby that actually joined him in not going to the White House. Maybe I'm forgetting somebody else. But just that, yeah, he was a little disappointed, and that was the quote, that his teammates didn't get it. Do you feel like there are a lot of guys that are actually opening up their eyes a little bit and understanding a little bit more as to what it means to be not just a black person in North America, but also just a black player in the NHL, a league that is predominantly white?
Well, I think with all the conversations that have been started, I think guys are starting to open their eyes a little bit. Look, you can't, I can't expect a white guy to understand what a black guy has gone through in their life, you know, in regards to racism. Because, let's be honest, white people don't go through racism. It's just not part of their life. So I'm not going to sit here and, you know, I can't sit there and say, you know, it sucks because you don't get it. Well, you don't get it because you haven't lived it. And it's tough for you to understand something you haven't lived. So I don't hold that against anybody. I think it's good that the conversations are starting so people can start to learn and start to somewhat get it. But, you know, it's very hard to expect them to understand that because it's never happened to them firsthand.
Talking to Ryan Reeves, and yeah, we've all been impressed with what you've done and the conversations you've had after these peaceful protests, and I expect, obviously, for that to continue for you. You don't have a game today. You guys have a game tomorrow. You played one. You play three of these seeding games. You've seen games with actual stakes played as well. What is it like to play in these games where, yeah, sure, you want to win them and you guys are 1-0, sure, let's win all three. But, yeah, the stakes can't be the same as, you know, a five-game series, and if you lose it, you're out of the bubble. What's it been like to play in these games?
Well, you know, it's funny because, like, you guys all keep saying, yeah, you know, you want to win, but you don't. Well, no, we want to win. You know, it's just like fighting for the first place seed in, at the end of the regular season. You know, those games matter because you're playing the lower seed. So, yeah, while it's not the same repercussions, the loss isn't the same repercussions as, you know, getting kicked out of the bubble. Well, it's still, you know, we want to win the Stanley Cup and we want the easiest route there. So these games definitely matter. And, you know, our games have been intense. I think you know, we've treated them like a playoff game, and I expect us to continue to do so.
Yeah, and, well, I think that the reason we do it, though, is that because there's so much parity in the NHL that if you just look across the league, I know that there are some groups that are in there that shouldn't be in the playoffs. Like, we have the 24th-rated team. That's not a normal year. So, yeah, if you're higher, there is the potential to face one of those groups. But that also means that they beat somebody that is deserving. And, again, that speaks to the parity in the league. So you guys are battling, and I believe you when you say that you are treating these like seeding games. But ultimately, the move forward, if you really want to have a competitive advantage as the top teams, is to take luck out of the equation entirely. Would you be down as a player if they let you guys pick your opponent moving forward? Like, if part of the new playoff format was, okay, Golden Knights, you finished first in the West, you get first pick to see who you play in the first round.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to say I'd be opposed to that. I don't know if it would be the fairest way to do it, but yeah, best believe if we finish first, I would never say no to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who would you pick
and
right now?
Who would you pick? Yeah.
Yeah. Who would you pick?
Who would I pick?
Yeah.
Wow, he's going to answer.
Probably the most physical team. I'd have to look, but probably the most physical team.
That's so too bad.
That seems to fire me up a little bit. I don't like the sleepers where nobody likes to chirp and nobody gets in your face. I like guys getting in my face and trying to fight back, and that kind of fires me up a little bit more.
Yeah, you know what? That brings me to my next question, because obviously, and we talked actually about this, and you specifically in that cup run, how important you were to that team. But we've seen in some of these playoff games, the play-in games with no fans, that the tough guys, the physical guys, have taken it upon themselves to maybe give some of these games extra juice, especially early, and it's really helped. Do you think, like, guys that play your style of hockey are even more important when you're talking about an atmosphere that is not exactly going to geek you up because there's no fans?
Well, that's kind of like a different perspective than most people would have. I would think that, you know, a lot of people would say the tough guys, the guys who draw the energy for the crowd, don't really have a role anymore. So I like your perspective better, but no.
Is it right, though?
I don't know if that has anything to do with the crowd. I think it has to do with the situation. I think, you know, you're in a weird atmosphere with no fans, and I think you more want to fire up your bench than anything because there is no fans. So, yeah, for sure. I think we have a big role to keep the boys energized and make sure that our game isn't slipping because the atmosphere has changed a little bit. I look at it like that.
Yeah, no, that's the way we did too. And again, we're looking at it through a very weird perspective because we follow the team most closely that is arguably the least physical team in the entire NHL in the Toronto Maple Leafs. But they have one guy who does that in Kyle Clifford. They only played him 3 minutes in the first game, and they got hammered for a lack of intensity. And game two, it starts with Kyle Clifford absolutely burying somebody, forcing him off the ice with a massive hit. And yeah, the game felt a little bit more intense. It felt like the team was, yeah, a little bit more dialed in from the jump. And of course, their backs were against the wall, so you can draw a lot of different conclusions to this. But it was hard not to notice the impact that he had in that game at the very beginning of that game. And so, no, I understand what the argument would be about firing up a crowd, but ultimately it's about firing up your bench. And if somebody fights right away or somebody lays a big hit right away, I can't imagine that that doesn't grab everybody's attention and then kind of focus you in a game where, yeah, you said it, there's really limited atmosphere.
For sure, and you know, not only just firing up your bench, but deflating the other bench. You know, yeah. Clifford goes and lays that guy out, and I saw that hit. It was a big hit. That guy looked hurt, and you best believe when it fires up your bench, it deflates the other bench too. And, you know, it's like, oh man, this guy's coming today. You know, we might have just lost a key player. You know, it takes a toll on your bench when guys are running around like that, and you don't really have an answer. You know, you don't have a guy on the bench to answer to that. So. I think this role is very important in the playoffs.
So, I don't know if you noticed. It seems pretty normal now, though, once the one lady threw the hats on the ice during Connor McDavid's hat trick. Now it actually feels just like a regular, normal... Can't even tell that the fans aren't there because there's hats on the ice during hat tricks.
Yeah, for sure. Normal day. Connor McDavid scored a hat trick in Edmonton and three hats at the ice. Normal day. Yeah,
exactly. I loved that lady who had to run down and throw them on the ice. But one thing that we talked about a lot was, yeah, because, dude, you said it. You like to chirp. You like it when you get in people's faces and when they get in yours. And we were really worried about whether or not the NHL was going to lose a little bit of that because there was no fan sounds. And, you know, you don't play music during the game. We didn't really know how the pumped-in crowd noise was going to go in terms of what you'd be able to hear. But we really did think for some pretty long stretches as fans and media members that you were going to be able to hear a lot more of what the players were saying. And there were questions about how you're going to protect guys and whether it was the right thing to do and what the delay was going to be like. Have you noticed that guys are talking more to kind of try to pump you up for, like you said, to try to fire up your bench, that guys have been a little hesitant because they're not sure of what you can hear? Like, what's it like in terms of the perspective or from the perspective of a guy who likes to talk a lot of trash?
When you're on the ice, you don't notice it as much as when you're sitting on the bench. I think when you're on the ice, the adrenaline's pumping enough that you're really just focused on the play. And if something, you know, if I start chirping somebody, I'm not really noticing that there's no crowd. Well, you know, maybe I shouldn't do that. Because, I don't chirp guys to fire up the crowd. I think I chirp guys to get in their face and make them crumble and kind of make them scared a little bit. So, there wasn't a lot of chirping in the Dallas game, but I don't know if you guys saw the exhibition game against Arizona, but there was a lot of that in that game. And that was just an exhibition game. And I don't know what you guys can really hear.
Nothing.
But if you can hear something, I'm sure you heard me.
Yeah.
That's the thing. We want to hear you. Like,
yes, we do.
We want
swears
hear
and all. Yeah. And you know what? We're big boys. We want to hear everything. Yeah.
We know you don't want us to hear
I'm
you.
I'm sure you do. I did see that they were putting it on like a 5-second delay. I don't know if they actually did that or not or how they're going about that, but I don't know how you could miss it. My voice carries pretty far, so
Yeah, maybe just be a little louder, next time. Just a little louder.
I'll yell tomorrow. Don't worry.
Just so you'll sell. It'll work, man.
Yeah, I can't wait. Ryan, this was great. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thanks, man.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Here's Ryan Reeves, Vegas Golden Knights forward, and doing his best to further the cause of social justice.
I do wonder how much more guys are watching other games. Like he mentioned, he saw the Clifford hit. I would guess that makes a highlight pack, and so other guys
are gonna ask
watching highlights. But, yeah, just what else is there to do but watch other hockey games? right?
And we've seen guys in the NBA bubble actually show up for some of these games. And who did we talk to who said it's kind of a process where you got to put your name on a list and it's only a limited number of guys that can go? But we've seen DeMar DeRozan. He was like at every game, I feel like, for the first 3 days of this thing. I wonder if the same is happening in the NHL. I haven't seen any shots of any of the other players at the arena while this is happening. And that's, you know, it's probably due to the nature of the bubbles aren't exactly the same as the NBA, where you got to take like a bus from some of the hotels to get to Scotia. Like if you're staying at the X Hotel, you got to take a bus to get to Scotiabank Arena, and you're going to set up a bus
to
go there.
Just, you know, I saw a video or a picture, sorry, of the Rangers or a couple Rangers players watching the Leafs game last night, just there from the hotel where they're on bar stools. You don't need to go to the game to watch more hockey. I'm saying that you can also just be watching on the television set. People always ask me when they meet me in real life, or my friends do this, and they say, you know, how do you not swear more on the radio? Because I cuss a little off air. I like to throw.
It doesn't matter if my children are in the car. It doesn't matter to you.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It's an education for them.
It's just when the mic goes off, I'll generally be cussing up a bit of a storm, right? I don't really find that to be a problem when I'm talking on the radio for the most part. But talk trash is the hardest for me. It's that every time I have to check myself and say, talk trash. Are you talking trash? It just sounds so wrong. It just, there should almost be, because you know what it is. You know what kind of talk
poop.
It is.
You talk, it's poop talk.
It's poop talk. It's, we can't say it. It's stupid. Let me say it.
Your poop mouth. Yeah, let me use your poop mouth. Do your poop talk. Yeah,
it's just the one place where, come on, you can't. It trash talk just sounds so like your grandpa would say.
Yeah, I was gonna say my mom.
Yeah,
trash talk. Oh, are you talking trash?
Okay, yeah, you talking? Yeah, exactly. It's ugh, gross. If someone said that to me in real life, if we were out somewhere and someone said, "Oh, you talk trash," what are you talking about? What was that? What did you just utter?
Yeah,
very strange.
Gross.